This weekend starts right after this.
As a business owner, you need protection for your physical and financial assets. From general and professional liability insurance to business owners and commercial auto policies, GEICO can help. Go to geicocommercial.com for your free quote and see how much you could save today.
From Compass Media Networks, this is America's First News. This weekend, with your host, Gordon Deal.
What disaster victims need months from now. I'm Gordon Deal with Jennifer Koschenka. Thanks for spending part of your weekend with us. Here's what's coming up this hour.
We're all encouraged to donate things like money or other necessities in the days after a natural disaster like a hurricane, but what will victims need in a year?
On a related note, ahead of the Harvey Telethon on Tuesday, a look at some of the most iconic benefit concerts in history.
With summer fading and autumn upon us, there's a discussion about the only two ways people view the fall season.
And the contestant from American Ninja Warrior, who pays his kids to be physically fit, as a twist on a weekly allowance.
For a lot of parents, it just doesn't sit well to be paying your kids for things that you see as a family responsibility or stuff that they should be doing anyway, like making their bed, taking out the trash, washing the occasional dish. So he decided he was going to pay his kids and really incentivize fitness that they were already doing, and so he'll pay them for push-ups, for planks.
Kelly Grant at CNBC.com on a new type of allowance. She's here later in the hour. Both Republicans and Democrats are facing dramatic long-term realignments in the religious composition of their base, and it will be a challenge for the parties to weather this shift gracefully. Amelia Thompson DeVoe is a contributing writer to 538.com. She's been examining new data from the Public Religion Research Institute. Amelia, give us some findings.
There's this big new survey with lots of data about shifting religious demographics in the U.S. today. And what we focused on was what this means for the two political parties. And so what you see in the data is that both Republicans and Democrats are facing some pretty dramatic shifts in the religious makeup of their base. White Christians comprise the vast majority of the Republican base, and they have for quite some time. But the data shows that this group, white Christians, are both declining. So fewer and fewer white Christians are identifying as white Christians. And by white Christians, we mean white Protestants, white Catholics. Mm-hmm. So that's evangelicals, but also mainline Protestants. It's a pretty big group.
Right.
Fewer and fewer people are identifying with those religious groups and going to church on Sunday morning. And then at the same time, those populations are also getting older. And what that means is that overall, white Christians are shrinking as a proportion of the population. And that's a pretty big deal for a group that comprises 70% of the Republican base.
Wow.
So that's what the Republicans are looking at. They're going to figure out how to broaden their message really in the next couple of election cycles to people who are outside that group, because they kind of don't have a choice when you look at these numbers. And then Democrats sort of have the opposite problem, which is that the group that they're drawing from, their coalition, is young and diverse, and many of them are not religious at all. But some of them are quite religious. So, the youngest groups, the youngest religious groups in the U.S. also happen to be disproportionately Democrat, so that's other world religions like Muslims, Hindus, Buddhists. The religiously affiliated are also quite young. This is good for the Democrats in some ways because they are, their coalition looks like America's youngest generation, which is the future.
Right.
But it's also pretty hard for a politician to come up with a message that is compelling to people who have very deep faith, and there are, a significant number of very religious people who identify as Democrats, but also people who don't have any faith at all. So that's going to be a pretty big challenge for Democrats going forward.
When they looked at the data, did they find that the folks who are, I guess the younger folks who are choosing not to go to church, does that indicate maybe they don't have political passion either and might not go to vote?
Yeah, so that's exactly one thing that that this organization, this polling organization, and other pollsters have found. And part of it is that they're just younger, and younger people tend not to vote as much as older people sort of across the board.
Okay.
So it's not related to religious identity in some ways. But the other theory is that churches are actually really important civic and political hubs. I mean, obviously pastors are not supposed to be endorsing candidates from the pulpits, but churches are really important for get out the vote drives and sort of getting people together, talking about issues and values they care about, and that translates into civic engagement, which is linked to political engagement. And so when you're not linked to a church or another institution, another religious institution, you're actually less likely to sort of get keyed into those networks. And so that's one theory for why the unaffiliated are less politically engaged.
Well, we're speaking with Amelia Thompson DeVoe, contributing writer at 538.com. Her piece is called America's Shifting Religious Makeup Could Spell Trouble for Both Parties. I can't even begin to guess, but did anybody take a stab at how you begin to craft a message when your base is shifting so much?
Well, I think it's going to be really difficult going forward because you have to be thinking about the future. So let's take the Republicans. You know, they have these pretty stark numbers that they have to deal with. They have to broaden beyond white Christians. But today, right now, white Christians are 70% of their base. So they don't want to lose those people. They don't want to lose, you know, the 2018 election or the, you know, the 2020 election because they're crafting this message that is for the base of the future. But if they also continue with a message that, you know, is kind of more alienating to these younger voters, but, you know, perhaps appeals to older white Christian voters, they might lose those younger voters. They might alienate them going forward. So I think it's a really hard needle to thread, but it's one that both parties are going to have to do going forward.
And the shift, I think you should point out the story, like these shifts could still be developing for years, right?
Yeah, that's the other thing is that sort of, you know, we think about these demographic changes are not something that you wake up one day and, oh, the country has changed in a way that I can see.
Right.
So these are really slow shifts and they're subtle shifts, and we're going to see them over many elections to come. And that's another sort of difficult difficult thing to pinpoint is when is the breaking point? And often we don't actually realize when that's happening as it's happening, and it's only when we look back we say, oh, you know, this was the election when this big shift happened. So that's certainly another tough dynamic as well.
Thanks, Amelia. Amelia Thompson DeVoe, contributing writer to 538.com. 13 minutes now after the hour on This Weekend. How would you like the convenience of joining a group cycling class whenever you want, right in your own home? Skip the commute to the gym, join live rides on the Peloton indoor cycling bike, or choose a ride on demand based on your favorite music. You can even choose your favorite world-class instructor. There are also dozens of on-demand scenic rides and additional off-bike workouts. The Peloton bike includes a 22-inch high-def touchscreen, performance tracking metrics, and a real-time leaderboard. In fact, see if you're working harder than me. My screen name is Radio Guy Gordon. Discover this cutting-edge indoor cycling bike that brings the studio experience to your home. Peloton is offering listeners a limited-time offer. Go to PelotonCycle.com, enter the code GORDONDEAL at checkout, and get 20% off accessories with your Peloton bike purchase. Get a great workout at home anytime you want. Go to PelotonCycle.com, use the code GORDONDEAL, and get started. Thanks for being with us. First weekend of the NFL season is upon us. Lots of sitting around, right, watching games on TV or in front of a laptop, making fantasy football adjustments. All that sitting around opens the door for a conversation about health. We're joined now by NFL Hall of Famer and Raiders legend Michael Haynes, here to talk a little football, but also his prostate cancer. Michael, I must say, I was a soccer player growing up, but I wanted to be your teammate on the Raiders. Love that those teams of the 70s, 80s.
Yeah, I was very lucky. I had a great career, you know, 7 years on the Patriots and then 7 years on the Raiders, and really blessed.
As a Jets fan, I prefer to discuss the Patriots, if you don't mind. Tell me about the prostate cancer diagnosis, how long ago, and what you went through.
Well, it's been a while now. So I was diagnosed. It all started with a screening taking place at the Pro Football Hall of Fame. And then later having a biopsy when I was back home in New York. I live in San Diego now, but that biopsy came back positive, and that's when everything changed. And so I realized that I was very ignorant when it came to my own health. Mm. I was in great shape, but I didn't know what the prostate does or did. I didn't know any symptoms of prostate cancer. I was in the dark.
Yeah.
But fortunately, the statistics that so many men were going to get, 1 in 5 African-American men would be diagnosed with this disease in their lifetime. That helped me because I said, I don't know any African-American men that have this disease. And so when I got through this whole deal, I wanted to make sure that other men didn't find out or was as ignorant about this disease as I was. And that's really what this campaign is about. It's about find out that you have it and the likelihood that you're going to have it and doing something about it when it's easily treatable.
Let me ask you something. You were obviously in great shape then. You were a Hall of Famer. So if not for the screening that day, would you have found out? Or were you regularly going to a doctor for checkups?
I was.
Oh, okay.
I was going every year. And one of the things, that's one of the reasons I try to encourage, even urologists and just general care doctors to talk a lot so that everybody's on the same page. My doctor thought because my PSA was under 4 for a guy my age that I was fine. But urologists say, no, you're looking for a spike, a radical increase in that PSA, and that could be from 1 to 3 in a year or 1 to 3.5 in 2 years, And you could actually have a PSA of 12 and not have prostate cancer. There could be something else going on in your body. But there should be some signs that everybody's on the same page regarding, and I think that would be a good idea. So education to everybody is important, I think.
At the time when you heard the C word, cancer, did you think you had just been given a death sentence?
I did. And fortunately, I was with my wife. I'm sure that's why before you're going to have a conversation like that with your patient, doctors probably always say, can you bring your wife or somebody with you? Because when he said I had cancer, even though I knew he was going to say it, it was really shocking. I mean, as soon as he called me and said, hey, can you come in and can you bring your wife? I knew he wasn't bringing me, wouldn't ask me to do that if it wasn't cancer.
Right. Oh, man.
But still, yeah, my life flashed before me, absolutely.
Wow. We're speaking with NFL Hall of Famer and Raiders legend Michael Haynes about prostate cancer awareness. How about some of the stuff going on today in the league, like concussions? This probably was not a concern of yours back then.
No, it wasn't. Not at all, really. And I guess what we're knowing now is it should have been. Back in my era when we played, there were guys that were knocked completely out during a game and would be back in two plays,
Yeah.
So the outcomes of those guys down the road, we're all looking at some of the bad results, and sometimes, guys are lucky. And so maybe I was one of the lucky guys. I'm not sure. I'm still young. So,
yeah.
So far, so good.
It's got to be in the back of your mind, though. You think about it?
I do. Whenever my wife says, hey, you're not doing what you used to do or, different things that she might bring up.
Oh, boy.
I wonder if this is an early sign or is she just being mean?
Yeah. your proximity to Lester Hayes at times, did that mean you ended a lot of games covered in stickum yourself?
No. I was on one side of the field and he was on the other. I do talk to Lester. I can't tell you how much fun I have talking to him about football. He's a brilliant guy, and people just don't know it because he's kind of lives up in Modesto, California, and he doesn't get out and do a lot of speaking. But one of the better guys that you'll ever meet.
And I wanted to be part of that team, man. I loved you guys when I was a teenager. Thanks for a few minutes, Michael. Best of luck health-wise. NFL Hall of Famer and Raiders legend Michael Haynes. 22 minutes now after the hour on This Weekend. Time now for a business update, and it's brought to you by the Michigan Economic Development Corporation. If you want to take your business to the top, take it to a top 10 state for business. Michigan. Contact michiganbusiness.org today. How'd you like to be earning $50,000 a year, getting above average raises, and being in high demand? Here's Who's Hot from Katie Hill, editor at moneyish.com. Katie, who made the list?
This sort of surprised me, but truck drivers, right? They got the biggest pay raise of anyone as compared to a year prior, up 5.7%. They now get paid about $52,000 a year, which is higher than the median pay in America. So, yeah, I mean, this doesn't require, it doesn't require a college degree or and all the debt that might come with that. It pays really well, and they've just gotten a huge, huge pay raise. What Glassdoor told me is that they're seeing these pay hikes because we're ordering a lot more things online, and so there's a big demand for truck drivers to be getting good. You know, you see how many Amazon packages probably arrive at front door,
sure.
But the trucks are the people shipping them from city to city to city, and so there's a huge demand right now for people driving trucks.
I don't want to say too much, but let me just say that the Amazon packages you referenced coming to my house are not addressed to me, and we'll just leave it at that. We'll just leave it at that.
I was I'm the guilty party in my house for the overuse of Amazon.
Your point's a good one, though. I'm not an economist, but if truck drivers are busy, that's a good sign that we're buying stuff and the economy's humming along.
And it certainly looks like that's going to continue. Look, there is concern, right, about self-driving trucks. That probably will happen in the future. But as of right now, it's not negatively impacting truck driver jobs. In fact, the opposite is happening, and we need more because people are ordering more things online, and they want it fast. And so they need people hitting the roads and driving those packages.
All right. So what other employment areas are getting the big pay raises these days?
And these other ones we've seen recently also getting pay raises, baristas, but again, their pay is pretty low to start with, so that could kind of explain that. But their pay hike is up nearly the same as truck drivers. Recruiters is one that's interesting to me because a lot of companies, it's very expensive to hire the wrong people, and as companies are hiring more and more, they're really looking for recruiters to help vet them through all these resumes and really find the right people. So that's a really good job to have now, too. But yeah, I mean, we saw about, on average for all of us, we did get raises over the past year, so that's really good news. They weren't huge. We didn't get a 5.7% raise, but we did get about an average of about a 2% raise. So that's not so bad.
We're speaking with Katie Hill, editor at Moneyish.com, about her piece entitled "This Blue Collar Job is Now the Hottest Gig in America and It Pays Well," a reference to truck drivers. We're also looking at other blue collar gigs. Here's one. I can't even believe this one is on your list as getting a pay raise, and that's bank teller. Right? These folks are like going extinct.
Yeah, one would think. But again, I mean, I think they started out with really low pay, and so they're getting little raises. Because you also see, what was interesting to me is a lot of, this reminds me, a lot of retail jobs right now are getting pay raises, which everyone's like, oh, retail, everyone just, you know, what are you talking about? But yeah, I mean, cashiers, 3.7% raises, store managers, 3.2%. They're saying holiday hiring, the big holiday hiring is still months away, but retailers are already making preparations for these short-term positions, and so that's an area to watch, too. And we often kind of think, oh, retail, well, no one's getting a raise doing that. But yeah, I mean, that's sort of what we're seeing.
Thanks, Katie. Katie Hill, editor at Moneyish.com. 30 minutes now after the hour on This Weekend. Omaha Steaks offers a huge variety, from premium steaks to skillet meals. This summer, I've enjoyed grilling them at barbecues. They also make the perfect business gift. Their gifts offer unique home cooking experiences from a trusted brand known for quality. Right now, you can experience for yourself what makes these business gifts so unique with an exclusive offer. Order the perfect business gift to try the Omaha Steaks gift experience for yourself, or send it as a gift. The perfect business gift includes 4 bacon-wrapped tri-tip steaks, 4 Omaha Steaks burgers, 4 gourmet franks, 2 boneless pork chops, 4 kielbasa sausages, plus free shipping and 4 caramel apple tartlets. This exclusive package is only $59.99. Go to omahasteaks.com, type deal in the search bar, and choose the perfect business gift. Again, omahasteaks.com. Enter the code DEAL in the search bar to send or experience this exclusive gift package for only $59.99. Thanks for spending part of your weekend with us. Gordon Deal with Jennifer Koschenka. Coming up this half hour, there are only 2 ways people really feel about autumn: love it or hate it. Also, the reality TV guy who pays his kids allowance money as they exercise. And the most iconic benefit concerts in history, sort of a preview to Tuesday's concert for Harvey Aid. That story in about 20 minutes. Well, after a disaster like Hurricane Harvey or Irma, determining what people need and when they need it is a key part of effective philanthropy. In fact, charitable giving experts say the wrong donation at the wrong time may actually do more harm than good. Wall Street Journal reporter Veronica Dagger is here with what disaster victims likely need now and much, much later. Veronica, what did you look at?
So basically, you know, a disaster hits and you see all this need and you're like, what do I do? What do the people need? I want to help out, but I want to make sure I'm doing the right thing. And sometimes when people think they're doing the right thing, like, you know, they see a disaster and they donate, you know, cases of water or teddy bears, that's often not what the victims of the disaster need. So you got to think a little bit more about what the people need and give to them what they need at the time they need those things. So, you know, if you give the wrong donation at the wrong time, you could actually do more harm than good.
Mm. All right. So your piece is interesting in that it kind of walks you through chronologically what's needed because, right, eventually the media coverage will die down once the waters recede and the folks start to rebuild. So what about that? What about a month later, 6 months later, even longer?
Yeah, so a month later, it's maybe not in headlines as much, but the people on the ground, they often still need cash. Those charities need cash to get their work done, to boost the community, help the community, boost that local economy. You can go on the local charity's website or even the national charity's website. They might have a specific page for that and see if the charity has any wish lists. Many of the charities are using online resources like Amazon wish lists to fulfill the victim's needs. So you don't know, maybe they'll need help with clothing or housing, and finding that out from them instead of you guessing is really valuable. There's also some established charities have set up specific recovery funds. And so there's an organization called the Center for Disaster Philanthropy, and they started a Hurricane Harvey recovery fund. And that's expected to help now, but also help a couple months from now. And they're going to put resources towards building as well as meeting the needs of young children and supporting mental health. A lot of people I spoke to said there's actually a huge mental health issue and crisis that happens often after a couple months after these disasters, because as you would imagine, people are so shell-shocked.
Yeah, well, I can only imagine. We're speaking with Wall Street Journal reporter Veronica Dagger. So how about longer out? How about a year later when we've long forgotten, well, people outside the region have long forgotten this?
Right, it's out of the news cycle, and so often, you know, people forget, and then the victims feel bad because they feel like they've been forgotten about. So you can still help. You can commit to that long-term recovery to help them rebuild. So way to do that is you can make monthly or even weekly donations to a charity that's helping in that neighborhood or that area. If you're able to travel and you actually have skills, perhaps you can help volunteer, like, you know, organizations like Habitat for Humanity or some of these other rebuilding organizations may need some skilled people to help out.
Mm. Very good. What else? What else jumped out at you here?
I think just understanding that there's a whole phenomenon called the second disaster. I had never heard of this before. But basically, after a crisis, people often donate things like teddy bears and clothes. And people on the ground, these charities, see those donations, even though they're well-intentioned, the charities see those donations as the second disaster. Because what happens is they pile up and they take the attention and resources away from survivors. All of a sudden, these charities need to figure out, what do we do with all this stuff? So just this understanding of, you may be meaning well, but just think twice before you give. And often, you know what, giving money is really, 9 times out of 10, the best thing to do, because then they can allocate that money towards what they want to use it towards.
Thanks, Veronica. Wall Street Journal reporter Veronica Dagger. 21 minutes now in front of the hour on this weekend. Thanks for being with us. Fall marks the end of the carefree summer, which some people mourn, and the return to routine and order, which others relish. Here's this weekend's Jennifer Koschenka.
Apparently, there are two types of people, those who love fall and those who hate it. Claire Ansbury of the Wall Street Journal has written a story called Falling in Love with Autumn and joins us now. Claire, tell us about the people who hate fall.
Well, those are the people who love summer. They like the carefree days. They don't want they like the unscheduled, you know, no routine, staying up late, being able to go barefoot, vacation, not having to worry about homework and science tests and projects. You know, they just like the ease of summer.
And what about the other folks?
Well, the people who love fall often like the cooler temperatures. And, you know, there's a lot of people who look at fall as sort of the start of a new year, you know, the start of the new school year. In the Jewish calendar, it is the start of the new year. So they look at it as sort of opportunities and new beginnings and sort of a time to really get back into things with a lot of energy.
So, Claire, the differences among these people isn't necessarily just a weather thing.
Right, right. I mean, people who live, you know, in states where there isn't much seasonal change still kind of associate it with a lot of things from their childhood. And the big thing is going back to school. And, you know, there's a lot of people where there are certain traditions in the fall, regardless of the temperature, or even people who moved to California who grew up in Maine, you know, sort of look at the seasons and remember with longing and have real fond memories of the fall. And there's also personal experience. If you lost someone or had a trauma in your life during a certain season, when that season begins, you often associate it with that memory as opposed to something involving the temperature.
Is there the biggest difference perhaps between summer and fall as opposed to fall and winter or the change of any other seasons?
I think so. I mean, because of the start of the school year, I mean, there's really no other, I mean, when you think about it, everybody's had that sort of start of the school year for the first, you know, 18, 20 years of their life. So that's a real common thing. And, you know, a lot of people dreaded school and a lot of people loved it. So there is a big difference. And summer is so carefree and fall really is a time of getting back to, you know, to a routine and schedule and order. You know, kids have to go to bed at a strict time. There's just more order to it.
Bring on the fall. This weekend's Jennifer Koshenko with Wall Street Journal columnist Claire Ansberry. 14 minutes now in front of the hour on This Weekend. You don't often find the words business and friendly in the same sentence, let alone the same state. Unless, of course, you're talking about Michigan. Michigan's business-friendly practices help them become a leader in industries that range from agriculture and cybersecurity to aerospace and defense. In fact, Michigan is ranked among the top 10 states for major new and expanded facilities, which makes Michigan more than business-friendly. It makes Michigan business smart. To learn more, visit michiganbusiness.com. It's time now for a finance update, and it's brought to you by Lexington Hotels. When traveling for business or pleasure, enjoy a warm welcome at Lexington and Red Lion Hotels, and join Hello Rewards for personalized perks and to earn free nights. As a physical education teacher and a two-time contestant on the challenging obstacle course competition American Ninja Warrior, Morgan Moose Wright is, of course, teaching his children to be physically fit, and he's melding those lessons with financial fitness. As Kelly Grant at CNBC.com explains, he ties their exercise to their weekly allowance. Kelly set this up.
Oh, well, this fun piece came out of me actually getting to watch TV once in a while. I turned on American Ninja Warrior and saw this contestant, Morgan Moose Wright, talking about how he pays his kids for physical fitness instead of paying them for chores. So we actually chatted with him a little bit about why he chooses to do this and, you know, kind of spun it off to talk about how do you pick an allowance system that works for you as a family.
All right, so explain his setup.
Well, Morgan, like a lot of parents, has this whole debate about allowance going on because for a lot of parents, it just doesn't sit well to be paying your kids for things that you see as a family responsibility or stuff that they should be doing anyway, like making their bed, taking out the trash, you know, washing the occasional dish, things like that. So he decided he was going to pay his kids and really incentivize fitness that they were already doing. And so he'll pay them for push-ups, for planks, for running miles. And it's something that, you know, it sounded kind of fun to me, and a lot of the experts that we talked to thought that was a great idea to be doing with your kids.
So can you say, you know what, I'm going to go run a mile instead of doing homework? Does that work?
No, sadly, you know, I mean, in this case, he makes sure that the kids have their chores done, they've got their homework done before they go out and do this, and that's certainly something if you were going to put in an allowance system in place where you're incentivizing this sort of behavior in your kids, you still want to make sure that they're covering all the bases of what you expect of them before they have this opportunity to go out and earn some money.
Wow. How expensive can that get, by the way, under his system?
Oh, well, you know, his kids are very fit, and he says he pays out about $50 to $60 a week in allowance. And, you know, really,
wow.
If you're setting your own budget for this as a family, like, you've got to decide, you know, is there a maximum that you want your kids to be able to earn? Is there some sort of a flat rate that you want to give them every week? That's a big part of when you're looking at allowances. What's your goal here? If you're going to tell your kids that this is money that, you know, this is how they have to pay for their entertainment for the week or all of their after-school snacks, you've got to make sure you're giving them the opportunity to earn enough to cover that, but maybe there's a point where you want to say to them, like, I can't be giving you some crazy amount of money every
week. Yeah. We're speaking with Kelly Grant, consumer reporter at CNBC.com. She's also a certified financial planner. She's written a piece entitled, This American Ninja Warrior Contestant Pays His Kids for Physical Fitness. We're going with the assumption that allowance is good, and in his case, it works for him. So based on that, what does he put limits or restrictions on what they can do with the money?
Well, allowance experts generally recommend that you don't put any restrictions, or at least not a lot of restrictions, on how your kids can spend the money for a couple of reasons. One, you want them to have that freedom of choice so that they can figure out for themselves how do they budget, how do they set savings goals. And also, honestly, because that freedom gives them the opportunity to make some small spending mistakes. If they blow their allowance on the first day, then, you know, they have maybe another week or so before they get paid again, and they have to think about, you know, that repercussion. And it's a much better way for them to make those mistakes, you know, in a small way when there's not, say, utility bills or the mortgage at stake to have to recover from that.
I don't carry a lot of cash. Can I pay the kids with a gift card?
You should be carrying some cash on that one for sure. You know, and I don't know that many people are going to accept your gift cards. Your kids might not like that. You know, certainly for your kids, you want to make sure that you've got the money on hand to pay them consistently. You don't want to get in a situation with your kids where you're like, oh, I owe you, or, you know, I'll pay you in 2 weeks. A big part of an allowance system is having the ability to pay them that small amount in cash consistently.
Thanks, Kelly. Kelly Grant at CNBC.com. Hey, reminder, by the way, we can connect on social media. You can friend us on Facebook. You can follow us on Twitter with the username at This Morning Show. You could follow me directly on Twitter, too, with the username at Gordon Deal. 6 minutes now in front of the hour on This Weekend. Glad you're with us. From Bangladesh to Manchester, celebrities have a history of putting on a show to raise money. Here's a brief history since the Benefit for Harvey Relief will air on Tuesday, featuring appearances from Beyonce and Barbara Streisand. It will also now benefit Irma victims. The list is from Moneyish.com. There's the Concert for Bangladesh. In 1971, the late sitar king Ravi Shankar approached Beatles guitarist George Harrison, and the two organized a pair of Madison Square Garden benefit concerts. The lineup featured also Ringo Starr, Eric Clapton, Bob Dylan, Billy Preston, Leon Russell. Raised an initial $250,000 for UNICEF, but reportedly almost $12 million by 1985 from recording proceeds. Live Aid in 1985, Boomtown Rats lead singer Bob Geldof was behind it. Featured Bowie, Phil Collins, Sting, Run DMC, Beach Boys, Madonna. Raised a reported $245 million. Then there was the America Tribute to Heroes in 2001. Springsteen, Bon Jovi, Willie Nelson, Billy Joel. $150 million raised. For Jennifer Koshenka, I'm Gordon Deal. Thanks for listening to This Weekend. Small business never stops moving, so Dell's U.S.-based small business technology advisors are trained to keep up. Just call 877-BUY-DELL to get connected with an advisor who will get to know your business and tailor a solution with Dell PCs powered by Intel Core processors that is right for you, so you can focus on your business and leave the tech questions to Dell. Call 877-BUY-DELL to get in touch with a tech advisor today.